I'm listening to the show every morning, and you can say it's grand. It's not grand if you're not on it, though.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
Some talent in Cork, isn't there? Wow. A few of the GAA boys weren't happy, but it was my sporting hero. I was contesting, I think, against Jimmy Barry Murphy. So once you're in that company, everything is good.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
It's very, very special. Believe me, I think it becomes more special when you're on the coach, because it's something, unfortunately, inside me that's ultra competitive, and I need to be there.
Catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM on the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Right, earlier this morning, we caught up with former Crossmaglen Rangers footballer Aaron Cunningham, who is now living in New York City and has been taking part in the protests over there over the past week. Now, Aaron has suffered racist abuse back here in Ireland and spoke to us about what it's like right now in the United States. Okay, delighted to say that we are joined on the line by former Crossmaglen Rangers footballer Aaron Cunningham. Aaron, how are things? Good evening to you, I dare say. It is 6:30 in the morning here. So what time is it there? Just gone 1:30, I presume?
Yeah, just after 1:30 a.m. Yeah, so that's not too bad. I'm awake anyway, so it's good.
The first question is, how are things? Like, what an unbelievably scary and crazy 10, 12 weeks it's been in New York City for a multitude of reasons. How has it been for you?
It's been very strange and quite surreal, you know. I think when the COVID crisis hit, nobody expected it to shut down really as it has done. It took everybody, I think, by surprise just how quickly things got shut down. So it's definitely a strange time. And then you have the backdrop of everything else that's going on right now too. Just adds to it, you know.
So could you explain to us your last 7 or 8 days or so after the video of George Floyd circulates and you start to realize that there is going to be a huge movement of people all around the States?
Yeah, so whenever the video came out, and I actually think the backdrop of COVID had a lot to do in this movement. Not only were people, you know, in front of the TV screens actually seeing and witnessing somebody die, they could not ignore it. They could not maybe be caught up in what would be considered their normal day-to-day life, maybe too busy to look at it, too busy to see the video. People seen it, and you're obviously seeing how people are reacting. It's something that's gone on for a long time. And, you know, the momentum has just snowballed in a really, really great, powerful way. I remember initially when it broke, watching the video and taking probably a few days to come to terms with what I'd actually just seen. And people started getting more and more outraged by it. It grew, and you're now seeing a lot of people basically saying that it's not good enough and that there should be no place for that in society. And, you know, it's a powerful thing that's happening right now.
Could you describe the protest that you were initially involved in and how that's grown over the last couple of weeks, and perhaps what you've seen as well? Because we're still getting stories even overnight about police in New York City and how the mayor has reacted to some fairly OTT showings of force from the police force, from the NYPD over there at the moment. So could you explain to us what you've seen and how you've been involved in the protest?
Yeah, so I was very careful to make sure that I picked a protest that was organised by somebody responsible, because there's a lot of things going on right now, and you want to make sure that, you know, you do your homework and your research into what's going on, so you know exactly where you're going to be and what it's going to be about. So I had seen a protest that was organized for Times Square. I think it was a couple of days ago. Must be Monday or Tuesday, I think. And I just picked it. It seemed like a good one to go to. It seemed to be well organized. When I got there at 3:00, there were maybe a couple of thousand people there, which was big in numbers, but not in terms of New York. You know, you're still looking around Times Square and it looked quite empty and vast. But by the time, I'd say maybe 4:00, 4:30 came, the place was full. And we continued then to march around New York downtown, ended up in Washington Square Park, where the final stages of that protest occurred. But it was a very powerful thing, walking through the streets of New York, meeting people beeping their car horns at you, cheering out the windows from their apartments, people joining the march along the way. I think by the end, there was tens of thousands of people in Washington Square Park. And it actually, at the time, I remember watching the protests on TV and wanting to actually take part, because I didn't really want to sit back and feel that, because I'm hugely, I'm a big advocate of this subject and I'm passionate about it, I couldn't really sit back and not do anything. So when I actually got down there, it actually filled you with hope a little bit. You know, people are outraged and people don't want to see it. And the surprising thing for me is that it wasn't just black people or people in minorities. A lot of white people are out there too, sort of my age, 30 to 40 and even younger. So it's that generation that's going to make a change here, I think.
From your perspective, how has the behaviour of the NYPD been over the last week or so?
There's two sides to it. They have been very forceful, in particular in a couple of videos that I've seen. You see people getting abused, getting assaulted, and getting away with it. And that's basically what this protest is about as well. You know, it's systemic racism, police brutality. And then on the flip side of that, where people are trying to protest peacefully, you have people with their own agendas out there doing riots and looting. Now, they are few and far between, but again, the police have to come down hard on that too. So there is a fine line, but there's no doubting that police brutality is something that does go on. It goes on a lot more than it should go on. And this is hopefully where it's going to come to an end.
Aaron, will you talk to us a little bit about, you mentioned the word hope there just a couple of moments ago, and I've actually just been, before we came on air here, just been watching that video, I don't know if you've seen it overnight, but a bunch of NFL players, black NFL players, have come out and said that they're tired of their franchises not coming out to speak about this thing. And from here, looking over there, there does feel to be, you've spoken about it as well, that maybe a little bit of momentum, that sense of global outrage almost by it. I am conscious that, like, I read, I don't know if you saw the statement from Michael D. Higgins during the week, where he was saying that he was a student in the US in, I think it might have been the 60s, and at that point there had been a real feeling of an opportunity to do something about systemic racism there, and to do something deep about it. In the context of that, obviously decades later, and we're still there, will you talk to us a little bit about that hope and where that's coming from and where you think it might go?
Yeah, I just feel that it's something that has been talked about and acted upon for years, you know, from Rosa Parks, wouldn't give up her seat on that bus, right through till now. And again, that was late 60s, and that's when the sort of that movement really started. And it's hard to think that we're still talking about it in 2020, you know, 50 years later. But it's here, and I think that it's a global thing. This feels different. Even speaking to people over here that have been involved in this movement for a long time now, even they say this one feels different. You know, you only have to turn on the screens and see the protests that are happening right throughout the world. Dublin, Belfast, Australia, Amsterdam. People are getting out and people aren't happy with it. So there does seem to be a real appetite for change.
Yeah.
I also think, though, that the hope sort of comes from seeing people my age, my generation and younger. They didn't grow up with this, you know. People in my generation especially have traveled all over the world, have friends from all different backgrounds and cultures. This racism is alien to us. We don't really understand it. We agree it shouldn't happen, and we're gonna try and stamp it out. But I think this is the time, you know. I don't think it's gonna go away as quickly as maybe other protests or other maybe movements or actions have faded. this is going to stay, and I think there is going to be real change. But again, it has to come from at a federal level as well. I think at a local level, things have to reform, be it socioeconomically or maybe a reform of police departments across the states. But I think reform has to happen locally. People have to get out and vote, and then the change can come at federal level. Now, it won't happen overnight, but, you know, you have to start somewhere, and I think this is happening right now.
We'd Gene Akpamoses on, and Joe were talking to Gene Akpamoses and Joseph Ojiwumi during the week about their own lived experiences in Ireland, and it was very clear from listening to that that wasn't always a smooth thing, that they were had been very much, as young people, very much exposed to racism. What's your own lived experience, Aaron? You were obviously, there was a high profile case back in 2012. People remember the back end of 2012 involving a Kilcoo player who was banned for 6 months, reduced to four. And ultimately, as you said at the time yourself, it was nothing more than a bit of an extended holiday for him. But can you talk to us about your own lived experience of it, and you know, whether that was something you had to experience as a kid, whether the Kilcoo incident was a one-off, or what is your experience of it here?
Well, I suppose growing up, obviously my dad being half black, he would have told me a lot about his experiences, again, playing Gaelic football with Armagh and playing soccer with Portadown. He would have told me growing up about his experience with racism, the things that he received. You know, whether people were throwing bananas down at him while he was playing, or receiving verbal abuse from supporters. He told me about it, and it's something that I couldn't get my head around why. You know, he was my dad, and he basically said to me from a young age that, you know, he had taken enough of that abuse that I didn't have to take it, and if something was to happen, that I should take a stand for it. And that's actually that's what happened. Circumstances sort of fell into play in that Ulster final, and you know, it was the sort of thing that, even though in the middle of the game I knew that, like, it was, I wouldn't say an opportunity, because that's the wrong word, but it was like something had to be done. And you know, that's coming 8 years now, which is just crazy. It seems just like yesterday. But you know, I even at the time, and I still feel that the GAA missed the boat a little bit in terms of their reaction to it. You know, you're going to have to look in 5 years' time. You look down the list of players that are going to be playing inter-county football, and they're going to have surnames from Eastern Europe and Africa, all around the world. It's even played over here. You know, I'm lucky enough to have represented New York over here in the Connacht Championship, and you know, that's a very big part of their ethos is, you know, including everybody. Everybody's equal, because it's such a very diverse city that we live in, and we want everybody to play our game. So I suppose that was the only real incident in senior football that happened to me. Again, when I was a kid, I would have got a few names here and there, but I sort of put that, not excusing it, but you put that down to kids being kids and not really understanding exactly what they're saying. But it's different when you get it from a grown man who knows exactly what they're trying to do. So that's where I sort of drew the line on that one. I felt that it was appropriate to speak out.
Yeah, it's grim either way. The bans obviously that were dished out at the time, and just on the missed opportunity in relation to the GAA specifically, Aaron, because they obviously play such an important role, and obviously stood up to the plate over the last while. I don't know how much attention you've been paying to in relation to the COVID situation here, but they've very much stood up to the plate there to demonstrate, I suppose, how they can actually reach into properly into communities when the will is there. Like in relation to the bans, and regardless of the fact that it was a December to April thing and had no impact on them whatsoever, like a ban obviously might deal with a racist in that they'll be less likely maybe to say something again, but actually in any kind of a deep-rooted way has no impact whatsoever in changing the culture of racist behavior. Have you any thoughts on that, I suppose, initially, or any ideas about how it would be if you were recommending the GAA to properly, deeply tackle this thing? What would be the best route?
It has to be education in schools. It has to, both with coordinated with GAA clubs and in schools. There should be some sort of like a diversity, inclusivity program Even maybe sensitivity is probably the wrong word, but I think going forward, we're going to have a lot of people, a lot of cultures, a lot of ethnicities playing our game. And we have to educate people on showing respect for all. And I think the only way to do that is doing it when they're young. There's no point doing it to somebody when they're 20, 25, 30, because they've already got beliefs instilled in them from what they were taught when they were young. So I believe that something needs to be done at a youth level. That's the way I would tackle it.
Yeah, because like the conversations around these things can be very stilted. John Barnes is one of the most thoughtful speakers in this topic that I've heard. He was actually on with our own Joe Malloy a couple of weeks ago talking about it as well. But his theory is that most people are racist on some level, and actually acknowledging that, and you're obviously at that point sort of turns on the tap and your capacity to do something about it. Whereas I think most people in conversation, when the word racism or racist comes up, the rush to tell you that they're not almost precludes any capacity to make any forward momentum in terms of tackling it.
Yeah, that's a very, very true statement. But again, you also, those people, if that's the route that maybe, you know, John Barnes was referring to, or people maybe admit it, but there has to be a will to change also, or a will even to listen. I've had a very, I wouldn't say a tough few days, but I've had a few tough conversations with people who are my friends over here. White, Irish, American, Hispanic, Black. We just thrashed out different issues and different topics and had a real proper life discussion about how things are, where we should go. I haven't lost any friends or anything, but we just basically just cleared the air a little bit in terms of what we believe racism is, or what can be done about it, what should be done about it. And we haven't seen eye to eye all the time, but it's that willingness to engage in that conversation. You know, there has to be a line of communication. You know, I've seen it. People aren't willing to engage in conversation. They don't want to listen to your opinion. They've got a one track mind, and you know, good luck to them.
There's a disparity in what people believe racism to be, right?
100%, 100%, yeah. There's especially in this country, there's like an undercurrent that people aren't even aware of. You know, on why things are the way they are. Maybe even like socioeconomically over here, the opportunities that people are afforded that people of privilege can't see. And then maybe they can see it and don't want to see it, or don't want to acknowledge that they see it, you know? So there's a whole lot of different branches that it can come in without being outwardly racist. But yeah, there's a big issue, and it's not even just in America, but in terms of the world, even in terms of our own country, you see that undercurrent at times. But look, we have to start a dialogue somewhere, and at least be willing to have a conversation about it. I think that's the first part. You have to be willing to engage in a conversation that sometimes is tough, you know.
How does that undercurrent exist in Ireland?
I mean, we sort of seen it in the north a little bit, maybe a little bit before my time, you know, when the British were there, and the Catholics in the north were mistreated for years, and you know, Catholics in the north marched for a vote. You know, it does echo. I'm not saying it's the same thing or anything, but it echoes what a lot of people are going through right throughout the world, even in this country, you know.
Yeah, it's the power of conversation, Aaron, isn't it? I mean, I think that's one of the most important things that you said here over the last little while, that there is there's a very different thing between getting out and, like, I'd be conscious as well that marches have happened before, movements have happened before, campaigns have happened before, and yet we're in the same place decades later. But that honesty of conversation on a very local level is almost one of the keys here.
Yeah. At a local level, you have to have those conversations. Things have to reform at local level before there's any improvement, because you can, especially in this country, You can federally, you can make all the changes that you want, but at a local level, it's still going to exist, you know, and things are very short here. You get a 4-year term and it swings back from one party to the other, and, you know, people haven't got enough time to set things up, and it sort of has to be a cross-party initiative. I feel that the guy in charge here right now is more divisive than good, clearly. You know, so the first thing is people are gonna vote here and get him out in November and start taking it from there, because he's showing absolutely zero leadership during this time, you know.
How concerned would you be, Aaron, that, I mean, that Reagan was the last time a sitting president wasn't elected back in, and he's obviously giving voice to a lot of dangerous people out there and a lot of dangerous methodologies. How concerned would you be if this guy gets re-elected?
Very concerned. I would believe that it would be the end of that free America that we all have in our heads. He basically wants to run it like a dictatorship. He looks up to the guys in the Far East, North Korea, China, although with the coronavirus, he's since slated China, but he sort of comes and goes when it suits him. Even Putin, he loves how he can control his people. And that's basically what he wants to do here. He wants to control people. He incites hatred, divisiveness. You know, he's doing nothing to bring unity to people during this time whatsoever. And I think, you know, his handling of the whole COVID crisis, I believe, sort of took a few points away from him in regards his re-election. But I think his handling of this situation and not openly condemning the cops in Minnesota for murdering George Floyd, I think that's really going to come back to Biden, because even within the Republican Party, you know, you watch the guy die on screen and nothing has been said about it. So, you know, he's blasted peaceful protesters in front of the White House so that he can walk across and get a photo op in front of a church holding a Bible that he doesn't know what's in it. You know, he's playing to a certain demographic in the States, that middle America. This is a big election. If he gets reelected, this is going to be a very, very, very bad place to be. I don't think it's going to help what's happening whatsoever.
In our lifetime, it feels like we're in the midst of a real opportunity here. I'm very conscious of not sort of wanting to end the conversation of some sort of a falsehood around hope. But you have mentioned the word a couple of times, and don't feel the need that you need to be. I don't have words in your mouth over it, but it does feel we're in the midst of a generational opportunity here. How hopeful are you that something concrete can come of all this?
One, very hopeful. I see it firsthand. It's not going away. You know, although I've only been here maybe 3.5-4 years, I've seen other news reports of people being killed, like George Floyd was killed. And this one feels different. You know, people do, whenever things happen like that, people do protest. You know, what usually happens somewhere in middle America, and you'll see a protest or two for a few days, and it'll be in the news for a week, and you'll not hear anything about it. This isn't going away. This is gone global in a big way. You're not just getting one or two influencers or celebrities speaking about it. You're getting proper people speaking about it. LeBron James speaking about it. He said he's not going to let it go. He's arguably the greatest basketball player in the world. For that culture, he's an absolute legend. You have Steve Kerr, again, in that basketball culture, but a white man. Everybody's talking about it. It's the word on everybody's lips, you know. There is a real opportunity here. Even take a step back from the States and look at how it's affected the rest of the world. the protests that are happening, New Zealand, as I said, Australia, Amsterdam, even at home, something has to be done. And I think this is the time, and people realize that this is the time. I'm just hoping that they'll actually vote, because that's, you know, you can protest all you want, you can ask for changes, but if you're not willing to get out and use your vote, then, you know, you might as well not protest it to begin with. So, you know, people here have to follow it up and vote.
Just on a final point then, Aaron, from an Irish perspective, looking at what's happening in the United States, how important is it for us as a society here in Ireland to not just simply point the finger at the United States and say racism happens over there, as somebody who has experienced outright explicit racism in this very country?
Just don't bury your head in the sand. Acknowledge that it's a thing, and deal with it. You know, it's a moral responsibility. It's a civil responsibility to speak up for those that are oppressed, or for those that have some sort of inequality. It's just don't have a conversation. Have a conversation. Be willing to have that conversation. Be willing to improve things. Just don't bury your head in the sand and take a lead. You know, I'm an Irish guy over here. I'm going to be very vocal about it on my social media, into my friends. You know, keep talking about it. Keep talking about it until people can't ignore you. You know what I mean? If you stop talking, it's very easy for it to be brushed on under the carpet. And I believe that this isn't going to be pushed under the carpet. You know, people are talking. People say they're going to keep talking about it. People are acting on it. I know it's still fresh and it's a week or two, but people are going to talk about it. And, you know, I really believe it's going to happen. Change is coming. It might take a couple of years to reform things, but change is coming here.
Well, listen, Aaron, it's been great catching up this morning. Hopefully chat to you again soon. And thanks a million for taking the call.
No worries at all. Thank you very much. Thank you.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.